Hey guys, Colin here from the Busby Babe, back with another Rooney Rewind episode. In this one, my guest is Nathan Heinschel. He's a fellow writer for the Busby Babe and an occasional guest on the Busby Babe podcast. We're going to be talking about the latter years of Wayne Rooney's career at Manchester United, in particular the Louis van Gaal years, and how Rooney's uncertainty over his position and his future at the club in general really played a factor in his form, and how his injuries were sort of catching up to him finally. Basically just the difficulties of simultaneously watching Wayne Rooney and Manchester United decline the way that they did. So enjoy it as much as you can, and thanks for tuning in.
Rooney and Ronaldo wait in the center. Rooney! Magical Manchester United! It defies description. How about sensational? How about superb? There's just no stopping him. Wayne's World is the place to be.
Hey guys, this is Colin back with another Rooney Rewind, and I'm joined by Nathan Heinschel. He's a fellow writer for the Busby Babe and occasional guest on the Busby Babe podcast. Nathan, how's it going?
Pretty swell, man. Feeling a little overwhelmed following up Gaz Drinkwater from Full Time Devils, but I'm going to do my best.
It feels a bit more drawn out than just three or four seasons because of what was happening to the entire Manchester United team. So 2013, Sir Alex Ferguson retires and names David Moyes as his successor, the chosen one. And we talked a little bit with, or Gaz and I talked a little bit about this, but Wayne Rooney actually had a really good individual season despite Manchester United finishing seventh and the collapse that eventually led to David Moyes being sacked.
Yeah, it was one of those things, you know, when you and I first started talking about you working on the Rooney Rewind podcast, and this was, I guess, kind of my perspective, because I started really following Manchester United during the David Moyes season. I remember in college watching the Champions League games. We would come in after class and watch those 3 o'clock games. And so I didn't know any better initially. It was one of my good friends, Jalen, that was the Manchester United fan. And I would just see how upset he was. And I didn't understand, you know, quite what was the cause initially. I had just known, you know, Rooney, and I learned to yell about Tom Cleverley a lot. But, you know, I got to watch Rooney play pretty well. And I'd always known Rooney, even if I didn't follow club soccer. And so I figured it was just business as usual. It's kind of amazing what perspective provides you once you do some research and really kind of delve into the Manchester United lore.
Yeah, I guess out of context, that season, I guess, may not have looked so bad. Out of the context of, I guess, like the league table and the narrative around it. You know, Champions League football, for anyone who's new to watching the sport, is always exciting. And Manchester United were actually pretty good in the Champions League that season, bar the first leg against Olympiacos and the second leg against Bayern Munich.
Yeah, and of course, that was actually the year I finally saw Manchester United for the first time. It was, I've only ever seen them here in the States, so it's like Diet Manchester United, but they were at FedEx Field. They played Inter Milan, and we got pretty good seats, and so we were really close. For whatever reason, Rooney seemed to be on the right wing a lot, and that's kind of where we were positioned for one half. So I always got to have the allure of being able to watch Rooney, and looking back on it now, it was nice I didn't have the context, so that way I could just sit there and enjoy it, because certainly now I just look back on it and it makes me sad.
Yeah, it was a difficult time for me. That was actually my first year of college, I think. So not only was I adjusting to the real world, but this perfect vision of Manchester United that I'd known my entire life was suddenly crashing down around me. Wayne Rooney's form throughout that season was a little bit spotty, but he did score absolute beauties. We talked about the West Ham goal from around the halfway line. And then the day that Gaz and I recorded that, I think later that night was when Wayne Rooney scored from the halfway line against DC, or for DC, against Orlando, too.
Yeah, and I'll tell you what, if you have the misfortune of following me on Twitter, I do want to apologize for mashing the retweet button on that video, but I'll tell you what, you know, every player just has that team they want to get up for, whether it's LeBron and Madison Square Garden, you know, Wayne Rooney, I guess he just loves to play against Orlando City, because it was almost a year to the date that he had that iconic play against Orlando City, where he had chased back the attacker, like, I don't know, 65 yards, and then just dropped a dime for Luciano Acosta from across the field that gave him the game winner too. So, you know, we're going to probably talk a little bit about Wayne Rooney and at what point do we say this is the start of him being washed. But certainly since he's come across the States, he's provided a lot of excitement and a lot of wow plays too.
And that's the sort of thing about the past it labeled for him, I guess. We'll get to more of that later. But we saw it in these seasons and then under Louis Van Gaal that Rooney was still very much capable of producing moments like this. And we're seeing it in MLS now, too. And it's not as frequent as when he was in his prime or whatever, but there's still just a confidence and a quality about Wayne Rooney that I think is a little bit absent in the Manchester United squad now, and that was definitely absent from his teammates in his latter years, or his later years at Manchester United.
Yeah, and right now, it makes me wonder if we would have kind of the leadership vacuum that you have in the dressing room right now, if a guy like Rooney's in there. I mean, no bad things to say about Ashley Young. That's a different podcast that we can do. But it just, ever since Ibra left, Rooney left, you know, there hasn't been that top dog. There hasn't been somebody that leads by example on the field and also will call somebody out in the dressing room. So, because the last thing you want to do is get called out by the guy who is playing the worst on the field, wearing the captain's armband. And so that's kind of, like you were saying, that's definitely something that's been lost in the last couple of years, and they've certainly been missing it, for sure.
Yeah, the summer that David Moyes' first summer before the 13-14 season, before it all went to hell, he spent a lot of time convincing Wayne Rooney to stay because he had sort of a falling out with Sir Alex in the previous season. He wasn't sure he was going to be playing the same role that he had always known as, you know, one of the leaders in the team, not just in the dressing room, but on the pitch as well. Robin Van Persie kind of taking the spotlight away with his goal. But he stays and he continues this partnership with Robin Van Persie, but he also at times carries the team, because when that David Moyes side came under pressure, it was just relentless. It was every part of the team was exposed, especially the defense with Rio Ferdinand and Nemanja Vidic starting to look their age, Patrice Evra getting criticized, and especially the midfield, like we talked about before, Tom Cleverley. It's like everything was collapsing around Wayne Rooney at Manchester United. At least that's how it felt as a fan. And he's still able to come up with some of these magical moments.
Yeah, and I'd almost draw a little bit of a parallel to looking at that juxtaposition between Ali's solid run of form and then the last couple weeks that we experienced this past season, where everything kind of collapsed around Pogba. And so he was the scapegoat. And that's something that really became, you know, defining for Wayne Rooney in the latter part of his Manchester United career, his career in the Premier League, before finally coming over to MLS and enjoying some kind of, increased stardom again. It's always been, he's looked at it as the scapegoat because everybody wants him to be Wayne Rooney from, you know, his peak years, and it just hasn't quite clicked for him. He's changed positions, and he still comes up with these moments where you're just like, wow, that's, you know, Wayne F and Rooney. You know, that's the captain, that's Waza. That's what he does. And then he'll just go away for 3-4 matches, and you're like, you know, this is our prize show horse with the broken leg, and somebody's got to take him out back, you know, to the glue farm or something, because, like, he can't be on the field anymore. He's a liability. And then you get him, you know, between 25 and 30 yards out from the goal with a free kick, and he'll still put it in. You're just like, all right, there you go. There's Wayne again.
Yeah,
so
it really is reflective of, I guess, modern football culture, where, you know, the Twitter instant reaction to everything is like everyone is constantly reacting to the moment rather than looking at the bigger picture. And with Wayne Rooney, it was very clear that he was not the player that he used to be. But we were constantly switching in and out of he's past it, he's back, he's past it, he's back. When in reality, I think the picture was much larger than just Wayne Rooney as being, you know, the sole problem at Manchester United. Look at, I mean, the help that they brought in around him. That David Moyes season, they made almost no transfers, except for Marouane Fellaini and then Juan Mata. When Robin Van Persie starts showing his age, they bring in Radamel Falcao on loan, and he doesn't work out. They make this huge purchase for Angel Di Maria, and he doesn't work out. So it's basically Rooney and Mata on their own as the consistent attacking duo for Manchester United at this point. But they're playing in this dull, you know, Louis van Gaal Dutch style that is kind of shoring up the defense, but also not producing a whole lot of goals.
Yeah. I've tried to put the Louis van Gaal years out of my mind because it was really just so difficult to watch. You know, I've never, like, with the context of I'd really started kind of really following the team in 13-14, I've never seen, you know, the classic swashbuckling Manchester United team of old that everybody talks about, and, you know, the 99ers and everything like that. I've had to experience it on YouTube. And so, yeah, that Van all year, I was like, do I really want to, you know, get fully invested in this team? Like, I know that my friend who's got me into club soccer is a huge Manchester United fan. Like, I want to, you know, support him, and I've been to their games, and I love the atmosphere. But at the same time, too, it's like, this is really just ugly to watch. And, you know, it didn't really matter where Rooney lined up for Van Gaal. It was always, he'd either be on an island or he just couldn't quite make it happen. While doing research, I stumbled across one of our contemporaries' articles, Tom Mallows from Royal Blue Merseyside on SB Nation, the Everton blog, and he kind of summed up, without even me realizing it initially, it was like how Rooney's career at United ended was also how that last 12 months at Everton were, where he found himself kind of trying to play that, you know, he couldn't be a striker, so let's put him at the number 10, and he would come up with something here and there, and then he would disappear, just because his legs weren't under him anymore. He was going up against, you know, stronger, faster players in the midfield, and there was an option like a Gylfi Sigurdsson where, you know, he should be playing the role that Rooney's playing. And so then it's like, where do we find room for Rooney at this point? Like, he can still make something happen, but we don't know where we can put him so that way he can make it happen. And so it was the latter part of the years that we saw with Moyes, Van Gaal, and Mourinho, he was kind of that in-betweener of what do we do with Rooney? And I felt like that was a huge question that defined a little bit those managers' careers too at Manchester United.
Yeah, you almost understand his instinct to put him in the midfield because he's such a good player on the ball. He's a very good passer. But the reason that they needed him in the midfield is because the midfield had no depth. And their answer to it was Ander Herrera, who Louis van Gaal refused to play at times for some reason, passed it, Bastian Schweinsteiger, and then Morgan Schneiderlin. You know, these all added to a Michael Carrick who was, like Rooney, losing his legs and quickly approaching the end of his career. This is a midfield that was desperate for creativity, and the answer to it was to put their best striker at midfield.
Yeah, and I mean, just going down that murderer's row of underwhelming players for United, it's, you can understand why he couldn't succeed because he had no backup, you know?
Yeah, I was ranking the transfer windows in the article I did a couple weeks ago, and it was so depressing going through some of these Louis van Gaal transfer windows.
Well, yeah, and shoot, just looking at the midfield right now, I don't know, you know, what's going on with the team, yeah. But certainly just looking at who's going to be starting on the pitch if the season started, you know, today, we got Pogba and a bunch of dudes. And Scotty McSauce, but it's it very similar, you know, it's like, who's going to be that person that steps up and helps, you know, the star player player in the midfield facilitate. And if, you know, football's not a sport like basketball where one man can take it over, you got to have support everywhere you are. And so that's really kind of part of the problem with Rooney. If he lost the ball, you know, who was there to support him? Who was there to get the ball back to him so that way he could create again in the offense? And with Rooney not being able to run like he used to, he had to play higher if you wanted him to create, or he's going to play, you know, farther back if you needed help on defense. And it was almost a Shaquille O'Neal situation. Do you want him on defense or do you want him on offense? Because otherwise, either way, you're going to have to sit him on one side of the playing field, because otherwise he's just going to get lost in transition.
Yeah, this really just, it's a perfect example of the mismanagement of the club since Sir Alex, or even, I guess, in some of the years that they had Sir Alex, because they didn't, those last couple transfer windows, they didn't bring a whole lot around Wayne Rooney other than Robin Van Persie and Chicharito, both of whom quickly deteriorated or left the side under the new management. But Wayne Rooney is surrounded in a system that's not built for attacking, so he has to adjust to that by becoming a midfielder. But he's not a midfielder, and he's exposed that way. So then the question becomes, what do we do with him? But the club isn't allowed to move on from him because, you know, he's the face of the team, and Woodward isn't going to, you know, let him go until he's absolutely sure that he's not part of the future anymore, which Jose Mourinho somehow did. Maybe the only thing he did with grace in his time at Manchester United was usher Wayne Rooney out of the side kind of peacefully, in a way that he was able to break the records, but also was not, you know, the heavy contributor that he used to be.
Yeah, and I think that's interesting bringing up the Mourinho era too. You know, Wayne's been a little bit more open recently in some interviews talking about his latter years at Manchester United. And I thought it was really interesting that he opened up about the final months with Mourinho and how it was one of those periods in his career where he felt embarrassed by his output level, because he knew what he was capable of, but he knew that his body wouldn't allow him to do those things. And he knew that his managers didn't have the confidence that he used to enjoy under like a Ferguson. And so when he talks about how when he came in, I think it was the Europa League final, he was a 89th minute substitute. And then, you know, Mourinho's like, "Hey, Rooney, I want you to lift the trophy." And Rooney's like, "Do I have to? You know, I don't feel like I've contributed anything to this team." And you got to almost feel for the guy too, because it's like, it feels like it wasn't as gradual. Like it felt like he fell off a cliff, you know, and it was certainly probably some tough medicine for him to take in that moment. Hey, we just got back into Champions League football, and he doesn't want to hold the trophy because he doesn't feel like he added anything to the team on that run.
Yeah, and it's a time as well that so many of the fans turned to him, and like you said, he was kind of the scapegoat for a lot of Manchester United's troubles, because he was the guy who was earning the wages, he was the face of the club, he was somebody that they had seen produce before, and now is looking like a shell of his former self, but still on occasion producing amazing moments. It's just this frustration with the consistency of this side and the consistency of Wayne Rooney, and it led a lot of people to, I guess, their view of Rooney became pretty sour after that.
Yeah, and I would just like to take this time now. If Rooney, if you're listening, I apologize for any tweet that came out in haste in like 2016, 2017. I didn't mean to badmouth you. You're the guy that got me to love club soccer, and I'm sorry. But it was tough to watch there for a couple months.
Hey, my hands are clean, man. I took every opportunity that I could on social media to be like, see, he's not past it. He's still got it. I think one of those was even, it was like the Burnley game in 2017 when Jose had, you know, resigned to sixth place and was just resting everyone he wasn't going to start in Europa League and playing, resting everyone he wanted to start in the Europa League and playing whoever was in the reserves at the time.
Yeah, and it was, I think it was during the Christmas slate of games. That would have been the 2016-17 season. And I just remember, I think, wasn't it that game he hit the free kick, and that's what broke the goal scoring record for Manchester
Stoke
United.
City. Yeah.
Yeah, I remember sitting there. We were in between games. That was when I was a media contact for university, and we're in between a men's and women's basketball doubleheader, and I had the game pulled up on my laptop, and I was just sprinting up and down the press box rafters, just screaming, you know, Wayne Rooney, like, of course he would hit that free kick. Of course he'd break the record like that. It wouldn't be some kind of stupid tap, and it would be some ridiculous goal, and, you know, he could disappear for 20 games, and he'd still pull something off, and you're just like, man, that's Wayne Rooney. That's my guy.
Yeah, and it wasn't like when he broke the England record on a penalty either. I'm glad that it was, you know, the spectacular, something that made him a Manchester United legend.
Absolutely. And that's been the consistent theme, or at least one of the consistent themes of this whole podcast series that you've been doing too. And I'm going to be the next person to bring it up. You know, the shin kick, the bicycle kick, whatever you want to call it, that was, I feel like, such an influential goal too, not only for his career, but just kind of, you know, what he was capable of. I remember that was back when SportsCenter used to do top play, and they would do top play of the week every Friday, and they would say, all right, each of the top five plays, is this better than this last one from last week? And I remember Wayne Rooney's bicycle kick was up for, I don't know, like 40 weeks. Yeah, it could not be unseated. It was the top play in America. And that was when the Premier League was kind of starting to find its footing with NBC Sports Network. So that was one of those things where, you know, club soccer quite hasn't hit that fever pitch yet for the mass audience. And Wayne Rooney's bicycle kick is still the number one play for the better part of a year. And it was just, you know, that's what he produced was just, you know, amazing plays. It left you incredulous. You could not believe that, you know, this unassuming dude from Liverpool would pull something off like that.
Yeah. And it's a lot easier to say this in hindsight, but those moments are definitely, even in these difficult years where he's only scoring 14, 15 goals a season, those moments are definitely a part of his Manchester United legacy. And I think they definitely boosted it a little bit, like that, the halfway line goal, the volley against West Ham in 2014, or that goal he scored against Tottenham where he dribbles through three players and then does the knockout punch celebration. You know, those are all a part of what makes him so iconic as a Manchester United player.
Yeah, and that, you know, that's the first thing I show, you know, to anybody. Hey, why do you like this team? Why do you like this player? Why have you gone away from, you know, watching more traditional American sports, and why are you such a big soccer fan now? And it's like, you know, it's a highlight reel of Rooney. These are the plays that I saw as I was starting to get access to the channels that finally played these games. You know, I've come from a more traditional American background, unlike you, so my parents didn't, you know, spend the money to have the soccer channels. So the only time I ever really got to watch anything was the World Cup. So Rooney was kind of that perfect YouTube era guy too, where you pull off something magnificent. And, you know, sorry to date myself, but, you know, you'd see the goal on MySpace, or you'd see the goal on Facebook, and you're just like, you know, Jesus Christ, how does this guy do this? And I think that's what's so fascinating about him, is the whole the tabloid thing, the internet thing that surrounds him, both for his benefit and, you know, against him too.
Yeah. All right, so I'm going to, I guess, dive into the 2015-2016 season a little bit. In my notes, I had this as the last one that we were going to discuss, but kind of the only season in particular I wanted to discuss, because I feel like it's a really good example of what we're trying to talk about with Wayne Rooney, and whether he's passed it or whether he's still got it, and paired with Manchester United and what they're able to do. Because going into this season, I remember thinking that Manchester United were kind of expected to challenge, at least for the title, at the very least, you know, finish third or fourth. And this wasn't just a season where Manchester United tailed off, but this was also a season where the rest of the top six clubs, traditional top six clubs, looked awful at times. Jose Mourinho's Chelsea, defending the title, ended up in the relegation zone, or just about in the relegation zone, before he was sacked. Manuel Pellegrini, I think, was still the Manchester City manager. They didn't do anything that season. I think maybe they won the League Cup and they made a decent Champions League run, but in the league they were abysmal. Arsenal looked like the closest title challengers, if you can believe it. And then Tottenham Hotspurs made a late challenge against Leicester, but was ultimately unsuccessful. So this is a year you look at where Leicester City, of all teams, come and win the Premier League title on 81 points, which was the same tally that Manchester United got last season when they finished second by 20 points to Manchester City. And I guess if I'm going to put a past it label on Wayne Rooney, I think it would be sometime in this season, because you going back, especially in watching it, I watched a few of the games last night on the season review DVD of the season, and it's just horrendous trying to sit through and watch this Manchester United team try and create goals in this Louis van Gaal system, and watching Wayne Rooney, at one point he had a very serious knee injury in this season, but watching him try and be the same player that he used to be and watching him be so slow, I guess, it was something that was really hard for me to watch at the time as well.
Yeah, and I'm hesitant to, you know, before or against something in that regard, but I want to give him the benefit of the doubt, I'd say, just because that Van Gaal system was so, I mean, for lack of a better word, at that point in 2015-16 was archaic. Mm-hmm. You had, because at the same time, you were starting to see the foundations being built to of what Manchester City and Liverpool were going to become. I remember sitting in my grandparents' house. It was the winter time, and I was thinking, like, texting my buddy, hey, you think we fire LVG and pick up Pep Guardiola? Because he was still at Bayern Munich, but he was, you know, yeah, mulling over his options. And, you know, Klopp had just taken over, and, you know, Liverpool would lose a 4-3 game, but at the same time, like, it was still exciting to watch a 4-3 game.
Yeah, they were trying to win, at least. Like, they were creating chances.
Yeah, it was like, all right, fine. You know, what's defense? We don't care. As long as we score some goals, we'll get some people behind us, and then we can fix that later. And guess what they did? Whereas we went defense first, and to the point where we just lured everybody to sleep. It just was, one, it wasn't attractive to watch. I can't imagine it was attractive to play. Everything was slowed down, and, you know, God forbid you'd have any kind of player with pace that you wouldn't, you know, get to take advantage of him. That was when Anthony Martial was technically unleashed, and Marcus Rashford was getting his debut as well, which are maybe two of the fastest players in the world. And you think, how would they ever fit in an LVG system? Because all he wants to do is, you know, play keep away in the back, like it's UNC's four corners with Dean Smith.
And that was kind of where, I guess, the team as a whole sort of picked it up, as well as Wayne Rooney, because down the stretch, during Wayne Rooney's injury period, Anthony Martial got more games at striker, and then Marcus Rashford also came through the necessity of, you know, needing players because there were so many injured. And that FA Cup run, you kind of see how influential Wayne Rooney is, along with these younger players making such a huge impact, you know, kind of being in a number 10 at times midfield role under Louis van Gaal. He wasn't always scoring the goals in that run, but you could see him kind of, you know, setting up Anthony Martial or Marcus Rashford to kind of take the game for him.
Yeah, and just looking at, if you want to go purely based on the numbers and the stats, you know, he had a fine season for an attacking midfielder who was coming off the bench. Obviously not a good season for Wayne Rooney, mm-hmm. but, you know, he had 8 goals and 6 assists. So it was a relatively even output for some, you know, for a number 10 that you might want to see. But of course that's a bench player's kind of numbers. That's not Wayne Rooney's numbers. And that's why he got killed for it.
And those are just his Premier League stats, right?
Yeah. That's just from the Premier League.
Yeah. And, I'm trying to think of the game. I think it was Club Bruges, like early in the Champions League qualifying round, second leg, where he scored a hat trick, and it was his first 3 goals of the season, and everyone just breathed a sigh of relief, because for about a month and a half, Wayne Rooney wasn't scoring at all, and he kind of got going a little bit after that, and I think he scored, in the first two games of that FA Cup run, he scored the clinching goals in both of those games.
Yeah, and I mean, really, the one game, that's the goal that kind of sticks out to me from that season, was the FA Cup game. For the life of me, I can't remember who they were playing.
Derby County goal where he bent it in from outside the area?
No, I think it – didn't he score one off a penalty?
The Sheffield United game was 1-0. He scored a penalty in like the 90th minute.
Yeah, it was a late penalty. I remember I was actually driving back from Ohio, and I was in the Pennsylvania mountains listening to this thing on the radio, and I'm just screaming at the radio. I cannot believe how poorly we're playing, and then, you know, all of a sudden they draw the penalty, and I'm like, Rooney's taking it, and of course Rooney just puts it in, and I'm just like punching the horn on the car, going like, Wayne Rooney! But at the same time, you're like, oh, wait, we won 1-0 in the 90th minute off a penalty. Like, that sucks.
Against Sheffield United, too. Like, I'll go ahead and say, Nathan, you're really lucky you didn't have to watch that game. I remember it being really, really, really boring.
Yeah.
It's just the epitome of Louis van Gaal, Manchester United. Well, I guess the epitome would be a 0-0 draw against Crystal Palace or something.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like I watched it with you just listening to it on the radio. I didn't miss anything. I mean, it was hilarious how much time the commentators had to say, like, all right, pass backwards, pass up to the midfield, oh, and then it's a pass back to the center back. And it's just like, oh, my goodness.
That was the thing about it wasn't that we – because part of the argument under Jose Mourinho, the argument against his style, was that when we played big teams, we didn't have the ball. And under Louis van Gaal, that wasn't really the case because we had the ball most of the match and almost no matter who we were playing. It was just we wouldn't create any chances. It was even not just shots on target, but shots in general. It was nothing.
Yeah, and so then you saw it just 30 miles west, a team like Liverpool. All right, let's get 42% possession, but we'll create 9 chances and score on 4 of them. You're like, oh man, what's going on over there? This Gegenpress thing and this guy with his, you know, crazy teeth and glasses, like, that looks like a lot of fun. But I don't know. The problem is I only remember the low points of that season. And that's the crux of the whole problem. I mean, they scored 49 goals that season, which is I don't know, good for Swansea.
Yeah, if you're scoring 49 goals in the league, I wouldn't even expect us to finish where we did, which was fifth. I mean, you know, I'd expect that to be mid-table.
Yeah, or even you're clenching your teeth going like, man, I hope we don't get dragged into this relegation battle.
Yeah.
Scoring that few goals.
And it's so frustrating looking back at how bad the rest of the Premier League was that year and we couldn't do anything because I remember in October or November, Manchester United were second or third. I think they may have even been first at one point. And just the collapse in December and the, you know, going from, second or third to sixth and seventh within the space of a month and a half. And watching these games, there was one against Newcastle where we kept getting in front. We were actually creating and scoring goals, and Wayne Rooney got two really, really good goals against Newcastle, and we still gave it away and drew 3-3. It's like, even when we score, that's when our defense collapses.
Yeah, and it's, to a certain degree, too, I'd say that the team kind of ebbed and flowed with Rooney. You know, just looking at it from a more macro perspective, it seemed like the team took a real dip in form whenever he went down with injury. At that midpoint of the season, you know, he goes down kind of in the November, December area, comes back, and then, oh, by the way, he's hurt again in January. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of when Leicester started to pull away, and you're like, wait, Leicester? And then we're also sitting there laughing at Chelsea because at that point they were, you know, in an actual relegation fight for like 2 seconds.
Yeah.
And it was the funniest thing ever. And, of course, my coworker at the time was an Arsenal fan, and he would just not shut up. I think it was Boxing Day we lost to Bournemouth. And he's like, how could you lose to Bournemouth? You guys suck. And it was just like, well, Rooney was a player, that's why.
Ones who ran the closest and still lost to Leicester. So.
Absolutely. Well, and then you had Tottenham, who decided to collapse against, oh, by the way, Chelsea, that was nearly relegated that season. It was where they all of a sudden, they sacked Mourinho, they picked it up, and then Tottenham, you know, kind of controlled their destiny for a hot second, and then Chelsea was like, oh, no, we're not going to let you do that. And sure enough, Fox has won the league, and it was like, what the hell's going on?
Yeah, and I don't want to take anything away from in case there are any Leicester City fans listening. I think they're winning the Premier League title that season is still truly remarkable and probably one of the greatest achievements in sports for an underdog. But it really does kind of highlight how poor the rest of the competition was at that time.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's one of the most fun things I've ever watched was them making that title run. I mean, I'm privy to the underdog. Of course, I went to Virginia Commonwealth University, who famously went to the Final Four in 2011. And you can look back on it and say that was kind of a weaker, March Madness tournament. But at the end of the day, like, you still got to win your games. And I just remember Leicester City became must-watch TV. I mean, the combinations between Mahrez and Vardy, and you're looking at N'Golo Kanté, and you're like, who the heck is this guy? Like, he's unbelievable. He's a fly trap that catches everything that's coming his way. He just doesn't let you move past him. I mean, they were such a fun team to watch. And then, of course, I'm a huge Kasabian fan, too. So them being a rock band from Leicester, they were just eating it up. And it was so much fun watching how they celebrated and, you know, how the city was celebrating. And it was really just a super cool moment. And I think it was really important for the Premier League to actually experience that. Because I think it brought in a lot of, you know, more casual fans and more mainstream fans, too. Because they're like, wait, how could a team with 5,000-1 odds win this league that's dominated by six teams? And it was, you know, unbelievable. But at the same time, too, you know, they took advantage of the situation that they had in front of them. And good on them for doing it.
Yeah, and I think another boost for the Premier League, even if they're not the most, you know, even if the teams aren't the highest quality in Europe at the time, it was still way more entertaining than a boring season in La Liga or Bundesliga, you know, where the one team has won 8 straight titles, you know, something like that.
Yeah, and you could almost argue that the Premier League has maybe the most parity because you've got 6 teams that vie for the title, but at the same time, you've got, you know, 6 teams out of 20 that have a legitimate shot every year, and everybody else is like, well, I hope we can get to a quarterfinal of the FA Cup. Like, that would define a really good season. And certainly coming from us, from a more American perspective, you watch, like, the NHL, where, I mean, literally any team can win that league, it feels like. Or, you know, the NFL sometimes have a team that pops up out of nowhere other than the Patriots. Basketball is a little more predetermined, I'd say. But at least with player movement, it switches up every year. It's not a team necessarily. It's a player that's more predestined to win the title. So I think it was important to keep everybody on their toes. Like, hey, if you guys screw around in the Premier League, like, there are some hungry teams that build teams properly, and they could surprise somebody. And, you know, that's kind of what Everton, I think, hopes to be every year. Shout-outs to my buddy Carl, who's going to take that comment very, very sorely. But
thanks for listening.
Yeah, well, he doesn't like that I keep saying that Wolves won the Everton Cup. He's disgusted by that term, but it's funny.
The seventh-place trophy.
Yeah.
All right, so I guess tying it back into Rooney a little bit in this 2015-16 season, they do go and win the FA Cup. Wayne Rooney makes, you know, somewhat of a return to form, despite his knee being gone by that point in the final where he runs down the field, he beats a couple defenders, then sets up Fellaini and Mata for their equalizer in, you know, the last 10 minutes, takes them to extra time, and then Lingard hits that winner, and Wayne Rooney gets to lift the FA Cup with Michael Carrick completing their, you know, trophy cabinet of every trophy that they've won in English football.
Yeah, it's kind of wild when you look at the ups and downs that he dealt with that season, that he was able to put, you know, a full 120 on the pitch playing in midfield. I mean, that's got to be one of the more impressive things that he's done in the latter portion of his career. Because, I mean, does he have any cartilage left in his knee at this point? You know, does he got any juice left in the legs? And he was able to help, you know, captain that team to the title. and the one real piece of Civil War that Van Aal won, it's certainly impressive what he was able to accomplish that day.
So, in terms of him being past it, though, do you think he was already past it, quote-unquote, by that point? Because I think for me, that second injury that season in the spring of 2016, the one that kept him out for 2 or 3 months, I think that was kind of the final blow to him, or at least his body.
Yeah, it's one of those things. When you're starting to get on that tail end of the prime years of your career, you know, you can just have that one significant injury that could really upend everything. For context of a basketball fan, I think that's what everybody's wondering, if that's going to happen with LeBron. He missed significant time, and he is way on the wrong side of 30, mm-hmm. having leg issues. And so we're waiting to see what happens with that. But certainly for a guy like Wayne Rooney, who, you know, wasn't a finesse player like Cristiano Ronaldo, he was kind of more of a hustle player. You can't not have your legs under you, especially when you weren't the paciest player to begin with. Certainly quick on the ball and everything like that, but he wasn't probably going to win a sprinting competition. And so getting lost in that island in the midfield was certainly tough. So between him, you know, getting older, racking up those injuries and that mileage, and then the system, I'd probably put it as the moment LVG signed the line, dotted line for becoming the manager. That was probably when we could fully officially say that Rooney was past it, because I don't think there was any hope playing for that coach that he could have rekindled anything.
Yeah, his favorite coach, or the best coach he ever played under.
Yeah, the best coach he ever played under, who he won one trophy with, and hold on, I got it pulled up. He scored
29 total goals, I think.
29 goals for. Yeah, it was painful to watch.
Do you think that if they had gone with somebody else at that point, that maybe he could have salvaged it a little bit in those last 2 or 3 seasons?
Yeah, I think with the right manager, obviously, as I say that, it sounded pretty stupidly obvious, but, you know, like, if a Pep Guardiola came in, I don't think Rooney plays. I think the right manager that could utilize him, that wouldn't look to just shuffle him off into the corner, you know, Rooney would then probably still have the same trajectory under, like, a Guardiola. He just wouldn't play as many minutes. But he'd still have a wow moment here and there. He'd still have like a Vincent Kompany strike from 30 yards out to basically clinch the league kind of goal under a Guardiola, but he'd play, you know, under 1,000 minutes that season. So I think the right mentality from a manager could have increased his mileage there, and he could have done a little bit more, but I don't think that there was really anybody waiting in the wings that would have been, you know, Manchester United material that could have then came in and turned Rooney back into, you know, some kind of pseudo Ferguson form. I think it was the moment Ferguson left, it was kind of like, all right, your days are numbered here, you know, Rooney, because you're kind of at the end of your prime now, and who's going to really come in and want to use you? They're going to want to bring in their people at this point. Mm-hmm. So,
all right. So we're towards the end of the podcast now, and there's a few questions that I ask every guest. So, Nathan, this first one that I've started incorporating in, what is your favorite Wayne Rooney moment?
I don't want to be that guy that says the goal, but I love that bicycle kick so much. I mean, it was really a defining moment for me as a fan, because that's what brought me into the fold. If I want to go a little bit more recent, you know, living in Virginia, I'm very close to DC United, and I try and make it up there for games whenever I can. Whether I was watching them on TV last year, I watched that Orlando City game live, and I just remember looking at Rooney and going like, oh my God, he's chasing this guy down. How's he catching up to him? And then from 65 yards out, he puts a ball perfectly for Luciano Acosta to win the game. And you're like, he still got the magic, and that was such an unbelievable play to watch. When I finally saw him live in person for DC United, it was back in August. They played the Portland Timbers, and he scored a brace, and it was one of the coolest things I've ever seen. And you're just like, just getting to see the magic that he's still able to produce, I think, is what I'm going to take with me, you know, when he finally retires. The little bit that I've personally got to see him live was so important to me, because he was the player that got me to invest in Manchester United. And so when I've gotten to see him, not just on TV, but in person, it's been extra special for me.
So the next one is, who is your footballing hero and why? I'm not sure if you just answered it at the end of that last bit right there.
So, I mean, he really is a super important player to me. I'd be lying if I said otherwise. A little bit of recency bias, too. I do love Zlatan Ibrahimovic. Like, when we signed him, I was so excited. Mm-hmm. And the little bit of magic that we got to watch him produce in that red kit was unbelievable. I'd love to apologize to him too, because I bought his jersey, I'm not even kidding, 3 days before he blew out his knee, so I'm pretty sure it's my fault. So I hope I can repent when in LA Galaxy come play DC United at the end of the summer. But I think I'd gotta still give it to Rooney. I just, he was the guy that, you know, tipped the scales for me. He's the guy that made me stop caring about the NFL. He's the guy that made me stop caring about NBA. He's the guy that made me stop caring about NHL, and I was all in. You know, I wouldn't be writing for the Busby Babe if it wasn't for Wayne Rooney. So I guess that'd be my answer.
Thank you, Wayne, for giving us Nathan.
For better or for worse, I know in recent weeks there's been some controversies. Some people think I might be a mole in the Busby Babe organization for Glazers, the Glazers and the Woodwards. But I'd like to just say that, no, I'm not, and I appreciate your comments.
Yeah, so a little bit of context. Nathan posted an article about, which one was it again? It was the Daniel James one, right?
Yeah, so first of all, the way writing works is you send something to your editor, and then your editor makes decisions about it. I had originally made my title "I Heart Daniel James." That was my article title, mm-hmm. And we switched it out to something different, saying that Manchester United fans should be more excited about Daniel James, which is a change that, you know, I thought that was a great title for it as well, because it was more of a call to arms. I'm excited to see what he can do. I think he represents potentially a new wave of doing business that I think would be really, really important for Manchester United to refine their own form. And so that was my article. But someone took the title more negatively than positively and was thinking, like, I was telling them that they should be more excited for Daniel James instead of the context of me, like, hey, come on, guys, I'm super excited about Daniel James, you should join me in that. So that was the whole thing. And they're like, but it made me chuckle. I've never been called out by my name before in an article and basically called a coward for not responding in comments, but it's just something I enjoyed writing. So
yeah. Plus, like, if we're going to be propagandists for the Glazer ownership of Manchester United, I think they should at least pay out a little bit, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't have 7 tweets a day during the season about Ashley Young if I was a Glazer's apologist, because he'd be on an island somewhere if I was running. He would not touch the captain's armband. He would never start at right back. He would just be chilling in a really nice Adidas jumpsuit, you know, rah-rah on the guys on the sideline, but he would not touch that pitch.
Well, Nathan, he is on an island somewhere. It's a very large island called Australia. So
I believe that's a continent.
All continents are just really big islands.
That's true. That's our high guy thought of the day for the Busby Babe.
You're welcome, America, and whoever else is listening. All right, last question, Nathan. What do you think Wayne Rooney's Manchester United legacy will be?
You know, I remember listening to the podcast with Gaz, and when you asked that question, it made me start thinking about it and some of the contextual things of what you guys had talked about too. you know, someone that paid more attention to the team during his entire career instead of the latter portions. Looking at it with hindsight, to bring it back again to American sports, I'm really sorry if you're somebody internationally who doesn't give a damn about what I'm talking about at this point. But, you know, I kind of see a lot of parallels between, like, Rooney and Aaron Rodgers, you know, because Rooney has that goal-scoring record now for the club, but I don't know that he'll ever be seen as the greatest Manchester United player of all time, even though he certainly deserves to be in the discussion. And so the reason why I liken it to Aaron Rodgers is, you know, we've seen Rooney deal with wasted transfer windows, which has hindered his ability to maximize output. Aaron Rodgers has experienced something similar. The Packers notoriously don't sign free agents. They try and just draft players and to varying degrees of success. And so Rodgers will throw the team on his back and carry him to an NFC championship, but eventually the team collapses and then they want to blame Rodgers for it, which is also something very similarly for Rooney. And then looking at it from a Mount Rushmore from the club perspective, you know, I don't know how many people who are like OG United fans would consider Rooney as that best player of all time. And in the same way, Aaron Rodgers might be the most talented Packer that they've ever had, but for the most part, hardcore Packer fans would still pick a Bart Starr or a Brett Favre over Aaron Rodgers. And I think that's the same way for Rooney. I think a lot of people, you know, would take like a George Best or a Bobby Charlton as opposed to like a Wayne Rooney. And I wonder if maybe as time goes on, that legacy changes up a little bit when people are able to put that perspective more, and maybe they'll just say, well, that's recency. That's why you're choosing Rooney over somebody else. But I think at least for the time being, his legacy will be one of the better players, but not the best player.
I'm really glad you went with Aaron Rodgers and not Eli Manning. Even though Eli Manning has, you know, twice as many Super Bowl trophies as Aaron Rodgers does. But
Eli Manning would be like if David Moyes won two Premier League titles. Like, he just kind of lucked into it.
Whoa. All right, we'll have a different podcast debating how good Eli Manning may or may not have been at the peak of his abilities. For now, Nathan, that was a really good answer. I agree with that. I was thinking about this Mount Rushmore after it was Mark Kastner, I think, was the first one to make the Manchester United Mount Rushmore comment on the podcast, and it made me think a lot about how to compare the legacy of Manchester United players. And it really does just come down, I think, to your personal relationship with the team and the history of it.
No, absolutely. I think it's so era-driven too, because the team's been so successful at so many different points in the club's history. You know, it would be difficult just to, if you want to go Bobby Charlton, George Best, all of a sudden that's two guys, and then mm-hmm. you got to pick between you know, Scholes,
Giggs, Cantona, David Beckham, yeah, Wayne Beckham, Rooney.
Yeah, everybody. I mean, there's been so many players that have come through this team. I mean, your Mount Rushmore needs to be, I don't know, at least 25 people.
It needs to be that really weird Bleacher Report image that they made after the women won the World Cup, where they just put random celebrities and TV stars behind them, except it'll make sense because it's all Manchester United players.
Yeah, or like the Sgt. Pepper Lonely Hearts Club album. If you did that but with all Manchester United players, you could maybe narrow it down then to the club's top players, because I'd say we've been blessed with talent. That's been such a defining portion of the entire club's history. So, you know, it's difficult to say just where Wayne Rooney would shake it out, but maybe we can just list them in alphabetical order and then everybody will be happy, right?
Right. We'll make a Garden of Legends or something and make, like, just a really big plaque or something.
I'm into it.
All right. Nathan, thanks for joining me. And listeners, thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you next time.
Absolutely. Been a blast.
I want to thank Nathan again for joining me, and be sure to check out his work at The Busby Babe. You can also follow him on Twitter at @NathanEno_. And, of course, you can follow me on Twitter as well at ColinTheShots95. I also want to apologize for the audio quality of this podcast. There were issues on my end. I wasn't able to record properly on my end of the conversation, but it should be a bit cleaner next time, and I want to thank you for sticking through it, and keep a lookout for the next podcast. Make sure you're subscribed to the Busby Babe stream so you don't miss out, and rate us, subscribe, do whatever, share it, and thanks for tuning in.